This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
This National Health Insurance Dialogue is proudly brought to you by RH Bupilo and Sakiwo on Power 98.7. Now we are talking.
And we continue our conversation on the NHI bill and the aspects that you may need clarity on. So you can call us on 0861-987-000. Remember that you can also tweet at Aldrin Simpere. Use the hashtag NHI dialogue, or NHI debate rather, and hashtag power dialogue. So we have two other panelists that we are introducing as part of the conversation that we're about to have next. That is, we're joined by Dr. Bandile Hadebe, who is the interim president at the Professionals League and BCX Portfolio Executive for Healthcare. He brings a technical policy insight on the NHI. And then Shelley McGee, is it McGee? McGee, yes. Shelley McGee, who is health and policy, was a health and policy analyst, also head of research at the South African Medical Association. And we still have Dr. Anben Pillay, who's the acting director general of the Department of Health and also holds the position of deputy director general for the National Health Insurance. And we also still have Dr. Rajesh Patel, who is the head of benefit and risk at the Board of Healthcare Funders of South Africa. Dr. Bandile, let's introduce you into the conversation as well. Listening into some of the questions and concerns that have been raised earlier on, what do you make of the conversation?
Interesting debate. Look, I think for me, what is kind of important is the correct articulation of the cost question. Mm-hmm. And where that money comes from and where that money will go to. There's an assumption that when we speak about the total budgets that's required for the NHI, we are speaking about starting from scratch. We are not starting from scratch. From a public sector perspective, there's an already 250 odd that is allocated to comprehensive services, mm-hmm. which is part of what the NHI services would be. So when we now speak about what do we really need for NHI, it's an amount that we're adding on top of that. So for instance, between now and 2025, 2026, the target year that we've set ourselves, what we will really be looking for from a budgetary perspective is an additional 33 billion to a maximum of about 55 billion per annum to cover the additional cost that we're looking for. Mm-hmm. Now, where is that money going? That money says there is latent capacity in the private sector, where you've got 60% usage of beds and 40% that is lying dormant in certain hospital. So in the context of that latent capacity, you are then going to take that money and cover the services, cover the people that would not have been able to access that 40% that's lying dormant in the private sector to then access that services. So if you go, for instance, to the question that Bongani Hadebe was raising around and the example he was raising with the legal clinic,
yeah.
it's not a correct narrative to what is going to happen in the NHI context. What the NHI is saying is that there's a total available services in the country which are currently not distributed properly. So you're saying, let's distribute the total available services in the country to the total patients that need those services. Mm-hmm. And that means that there then needs to be mobility of patients across both public and private as they need those services. And then the bill says, the state will put together mechanisms to pay for the people in instances where they would not have been able to pay for themselves at Netcare, at Life, at MediClinic.
Sure.
Because there's a vacant, latent capacity lying in those hospitals that is currently unutilized by both those that can afford and by those that can't afford. Mm-hmm. So the state is saying, we will send those that can't afford to occupy that space, and this is how we're going to pay for those services.
Mm-hmm. Shelley, do you agree with that explanation?
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting us today, and welcome. Hello to all the listeners. It is the duty of the state to recognize and achieve the right to healthcare for all of the people in the country. So, and that is what they're trying to do with the introduction of this NHI. And to an extent, there is latent capacity in the private sector that can be utilized. We in terms of the bill, are not really convinced that that is going to materialize from what is provided for in the bill in its current format at the moment, which is one of the reasons we had some concerns with it. So yes, trying to, certainly, we, you know, in the environment in South Africa, we need to utilize all the resources at our disposal. That's private, public, you know, we really need to almost get to a point where we don't have to sort of separate the two anymore if you're really going to be able to serve the population. So from SAMA's point of view, we, you know, we're not objecting to NHI as an idea. We're certainly not objecting to the setting up of an office and the setting up of these systems. In other words, to look at how we better distribute.
Who would you rather have sit there?
Who would I rather have sit?
Yeah, as part of as somebody who looks over the system and the implementation of the system as well.
Rather than the government.
Yeah.
This is the thing. It's the duty of the Ministry of Health to do these things in terms of providing healthcare to the nation. So in terms of the powers that the bill specifically gives the minister, there is a problem. And that if you really sort of break it down, he is in charge of absolutely everything, which for us is an issue. And that at the moment you might have a decent minister sitting in his position, but a few years down the line after another set of elections, you could have someone else in the... Yes?
So are you then saying take it out of the hands of the state?
No.
Or are you saying set up a body that is independent of the minister?
Yes. So ideally, this NHI should be a funding mechanism. The minister and the Department of Health can concern themselves with the provision of healthcare. The NHI can become what it was supposed to originally be, is a funding mechanism. Obviously, very integrated with these provision of healthcare mechanisms, and each accountable to each other. In fact, if you are the funder, the health system has to be accountable to you, and vice versa.
Dr. Pillay, that is a legitimate concern, right?
Yes, we've been trying to see how we engage with this concern, because I think to an earlier point which we had at the beginning of the discussion, I think the concern around fraud and abuse, etc., which is a clear risk to the fund. And, I mean, the point is that it's not whether it's fraud in the public sector or the private sector. The reality is wherever there are human beings and there's money, people want to put their hand in the cookie jar. And the question is, what systems do you have in place to protect those cookies? And when somebody does try to put their hand in the cookie jar, the system detects that. And so I think what we need to have a conversation about, what systems are in place as checks and balances for us to mitigate against those potential risks. Now, I think we're very much in agreement with some of the concerns that are raised around governance. The question is, how do you structure that in a manner that has the checks and balances, taking into account as well that you need to hold people accountable, right? So, for example, I'm currently the acting DG and the accounting officer for the Department of Health.
Sure.
If there's misappropriation of funds in the department, I must take the fall, right? So I'm the guy who must take the fall. If you're now saying, well, the minister is not the person that's going to be responsible, then when there's a problem in the fund, he can't take the fall because now it's going to be somebody else or some other structure. So you know, you need to think carefully through that as to who that's going to be, who's going to put those people in place, and who's going to remove them when they don't perform, because like all human beings, some people perform and some won't. So It's a great idea, but trying to put this together in a governance structure is the key question. We tried to do this in the bill. The initial bill had the minister appointing everybody. In the second version, the final version, what we've put in is that the minister announces he wants to appoint a board. He then puts this out for a public engagement. So in other words, an ad hoc panel that interviews people publicly and engages with them, and the CVs of these people will be put out, etc. The board would be the accounting structure, will be under scrutiny. But maybe we need to have a conversation about how those governance structures can be strengthened in order to deal with this problem, because we agree that these risks are there. But the question is, what is the best mechanism to deal with the risks in a manner that is appropriate?
Dr. Patel, is there a mechanism that you have thought about?
Well, there's quite a few varieties of options you can look at, from one where the Minister of Health deals with the service provision, as was suggested a moment ago. And then you have someone else who's being in charge of the financing side, which could be part of social services. In many other countries, it's part of that. Or it could be part of Treasury, for example. I think one of the big debates that was raised a while back, why it shouldn't be under the Minister of Health, was if there is a friction or dispute between service provision and a funder, how will the Minister of Health adjudicate between the two parties that he still carries out oversight? So I think the alternative, the suggestion was made by Anbin that yes, you can put out a panel there who can interview publicly, etc. The alternate suggestion was along the lines of what happens in SABC. Let Parliament, as independent people, interview, etc. But we know that there has been problems with governance
and
as
you
well.
That's the issue, right? That even if you go via the Parliament route of appointing board members,
that's political,
you're not
people.
Assured that you will be getting the best for the job.
Exactly. So I think I agree with Anne, but maybe what we need to do is sit around the table. And if we accept that there needs to be clear separation between funding and provision and regulatory, then to some extent there is some possibilities that you can put through. For example, make it accountable to different ministers, for example.
Okay, let's go to the power line quickly. 061-987-000, and you can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag power talk, also hashtag NHI debate. Matlala, good morning.
Morning, Andrew.
Sure.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. You can go ahead.
Yes. And then, I don't know, our government has failed us. I don't know how are they going to manage this NHI whilst they can't even manage the existing structures. Right now we've got a new hospital in Jabulani, but when you go there is nothing. No medicines, no doctors, no resources at all. They were saying they built that hospital so that there must not be an overcrowding in Barra. But still they are sending you there in Barra because there's nothing. I'm talking about the new hospital. So when you get to Barra, the front part of Barra is so nice and clean, but go right inside Barra. Yeah. No beds, no linen, nothing. Patient, even the nurses, they don't even care. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, in Barra, we've got good doctors. My sister was there, taking care of, the doctors were there, taking care of her, but nurses don't care. I don't think the old government, everything that they did was wrong. They've destroyed everything that was done because of these tender things of them.
Yeah.
Before, we used to have nurses, auxiliary nurses, taking care of wards, cleaning wards, doing beds, doing everything, and staff nurses. And there used to be matrons looking after what the auxiliary nurses are doing.
Okay, Matlala, sorry, we're running out of time. Just trying to get as many calls and comments as possible. Let's go to Bongani. Good morning, Bongani. Hi, Bongani.
Hi.
Sure, you can go ahead.
I think this must be commended for this.
Okay. We're going to try and get you on a different line, Bongani. There is a problem with the network there. But in the meantime, 0861-987-000, and you can also tweet at Aldrin St. Pierre, hashtag Power Talk and hashtag NHI Debate. Dr. Pillay responds to that call there from Matlala. Actually, there was a concern raised by one of the people on Twitter as well. Can't find the tweet now, who says that shouldn't government have tried to sort out the public services first of all before trying to co-opt the private sector to be part of NHI?
That's a very good comment, and my short response to that, that's exactly what we're doing. Remember, the NHI in its initial phases is about beefing up the public sector to be able to deliver the services and improve the quality. It's not about bringing in the private sector in the initial stages. I think Dr. Gumede made that point very clearly, and so did Rajesh, that the private sector comes in only in the final stages of the NHI. The initial stages of the NHI is about improving the quality in the public sector. Let me go to this. I think the caller was talking about the quality of care in Jabulani Hospital. Mm-hmm. One of the structural problems in our health system currently is in the public sector, a public facility receives a budget. And with that budget that they receive, they must take care of everybody that comes through the door. which is a very different funding arrangement from the private sector, where everybody that comes through the door is funded. So in other words, they pay for the services that they're going to utilize. Mm-hmm. In the public sector, when you have that arrangement, people then ration within the facility because they have no other way of managing that. So whoever comes to the door, the hospital manager must somehow find a way of delivering services. Under the NHI, we're changing that arrangement. We're saying that we will reimburse you based on the type of services you provide and what the cost of those services are. So the preoccupation about funding is no longer a facility problem. Now, when you have these problems about funding, you then have poor quality care because in the facility, people ration. They decide you're not very sick out, and so you can wait because somebody else must be treated, right? So those problems will arise about quality when you have these funding issues. But when you solve that problem by saying, I'll reimburse you for every patient that comes through based on the cost of the service you deliver, you change the dynamic. You also change the dynamic because the person that's coming through in a public hospital that's not happy with the service will go back to the fund and say, I'm not happy with the service I received there. Mm-hmm. And guess what? You can then go to another hospital after that, and then that hospital loses funding because now people no longer want to come to that hospital. They say the quality is very poor. Remember, the quality of these services will be published. So people will have a very clear sense about what the services look like, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's bring in a different aspect to this conversation. I'm speaking to Dorcas Lekganyana. Welcome, and welcome back to Powerhouse.
Thank you for having me. I do want to ask a question that relates to how you guys as NHI have structured your implementation courses, and that is that I do understand that the majority is to serve, or rather the mission is to serve the public at large, but have you considered how most South Africans actually do use alternative medicines such as traditional medicine, and it has become a basis of healthcare. Most people would rather go to see a traditional healer than go to a government hospital to get services there, because as it has been unpacked, the services there are not quite up to par. So I do want to ask, have you guys somehow found a way to implement, or rather include, the traditional health council in the NHI bill?
Okay, Dr. Pillay.
So on the African traditional medicine and the other traditional medicines, such as Chinese medicine, Unani, Tib, and Ayurveda, etc., there is a council that regulates their conduct. The intention under NHI is that these councils will define the scopes of practice of these individuals, and people who choose to visit them will then will receive their service at that point initially, but they will have the opportunity then to refer into a GP where they believe they are no longer able to assist the individual. The current problem is that somebody goes to a traditional healer, and when he goes to his doctor, he doesn't want to tell his doctor, I went there because there's this tension. And what we need to do is take that away and say, yes, you can choose to go to a traditional healer. If your traditional healer is no longer able to assist you, let him write you a note to your doctor so your doctor can take over. Because what happens, the doctor has no sight that this has happened, how long this disease is going on for, and then is unable to intervene. So we want to bring traditional healers as part of the health system rather than ostracize them and believe that they don't exist.
Have you started consulting them?
Yes, we have. There are structures currently in place. The issue we need to resolve is what would be their scope of practice, how would they refer, what will they have access to, and how do we engage with them so that when they identify somebody who is very ill and they know they can't manage them, how do they refer them into, for example, a Dr. Gumede, who can then take care of them in a manner that the patient doesn't feel as though when he goes to Dr. Gumede he's going to be afraid to admit that he went to traditional
But have we determined yet that what sort of ailments, for instance, would be treated under by traditional healers? Vis-a-vis, for instance, we have standards that are being put in place that if you want to go to a private hospital, these are some of the offerings that a private institution would have that this public hospital doesn't have.
I think in defining those standards, we must be cautious not to introduce a lens that is not appropriate for assessing the way traditional medicine is delivered. Mm-hmm. And so we've said to the Council for Traditional Health Practitioners, they need to come up with the standards by which we will then hold them accountable. So they're busy doing that as to what would be the minimum standards in terms of their facility, in terms of their practice, as well as the practitioner as to how do you then decide you're now a traditional health practitioner. There must be some way of us recognizing that so there's no fakes, etc., in the system. So those are the things they're going to do, and we'll then write law around that. Mm-hmm. So that will protect people that actually decide to go to them.
Okay, so it's 11:30, it's time for Power News Headlines. When we come back, we open up the floor again for some questions as well as comments. We'll also take your calls on 0861-987-000.
Power Talk with Aldrin St-Pierre, weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Power 98.7.
We are wrapping up our conversation on the NHI bill, and as I've indicated earlier on as well, that don't forget that between the 21st of February until the 25th of February, the public consultation processes will be here in Gauteng, so you want to go and give your submissions as well and what you make of the NHI bill. So now is the time where we rush through comments as well as questions. So 0861-987-000, and you can also tweet at Aldrin St-Pierre, hashtag PowerTalk and hashtag NHI Dialogue. So please be short, sharp, and straight to the point so that we get through as many comments as possible. Let's start with Mrs. Tembi. So good morning.
Hi, good morning, Aldrin, and to your guest. Two questions for your guest. I want to know whether the bill or the introduction of the new system is going to have changes or amendment in the National Health Act as well. I ask this because, I mean, currently the National Health Act does not provide for women's health. It defines women as mothers and provides for maternal health services. Mm-hmm. And maternal bracket is just 10 years of women's life. So that's question number one, where is women's health? Question number two is about traditional healers. Like, I kind of feel that your guest is patronizing them. Because, I mean, in my view, if they are part of the healthcare system, they must be compensated. I don't understand why people who use healthcare, I mean, traditional healthcare services, will have to pay direct. So he must talk about how are they going to be compensated. You know, how is the system going to pay them for, you know, their consultative fees and all of that.
Okay. Thank you so much for that. Pumzile, good morning.
Hello. I just have three inputs. Firstly, I want to say that our base as citizens of South Africa, we have the highest HIV infected number of people. And it just means in my mind that an average citizen is very expensive to maintain in terms of health. Number two, as a person who works and already does have insurance or health care, if you have an overall, you know, a healthcare that covers everyone, my general services will drop. It's just simple math. And the last one is that, you know, even if this plan would work, a general South African has lost hope in the government in terms of can they handle large volumes of money. We know that it will be looted at some point. Thank you. Okay.
And Bongani, good morning.
Good morning. Quickly. I've been covered in other aspects.
Okay.
In terms of the role of the minister. The minister is an accounting officer. When things go wrong, we hold him accountable to NHI. Umama Lapo, you must know that the minister is an accounting officer. And then secondly, they need just to go back to the bill and read the bill thoroughly so that they can understand what the minister role is, what is it. And then secondly, your guest in the studio, they're talking about the corruption. Yes, there are levels of corruption now, but then now, by the time the NHI is implemented in 2026, the levels of corruption would have gone down. So we cannot be wearing a cap of corruption in everything that we do. To say in 2026 there will be corruption, the minister will appoint so and so. No, come on. We know there's corruption now, but then now all means have been tried.
Yeah.
To eradicate corruption. So we cannot go. We cannot go that.
Okay.
Yes, they are right when they say NHI is to fix the structural damages that are there in our healthcare system. I agree with that because now we want everyone else to have the universal access. Thank you.
Okay, then. Thank you so much for your call there, Bongani. I don't know. Shelley, do you agree? Do you agree with Bongani that levels of corruption would have subsided by the time we implement NHI? But just quickly, as you answer that question, also touch on what Pumzile spoke of in terms of the confidence or lack thereof that the public have in government.
Okay, thanks. So I think in terms of the lack of confidence in government, certainly in the interactions we've had with our members who are all medical doctors, mm-hmm. that comes out very strongly. I mean, part of the reason for almost writing this whole thing off before it even starts is just, you know, there's just this assumption, oh, they won't do it. They won't do what they say. They can't do what they say. So this is the sort of the sense, and it's all going to get stolen anyway, this is the sense that people are looking at this initiative with.
Do you have any of your members who've tried to, who've said that they, if NHI is implemented, they would leave?
We did do a survey, and there were, you know, it was a very simple question that we asked, is, and we've seen this over time, is that there's a general exodus mm-hmm. of professions from the country, which is, you know, it's quite worrying for the country as a whole, not just of medical doctors.
Okay.
You know, so we did ask the question, and there was a significant chunk of doctors who said they would leave. But of course, you know, saying you're going to leave and then leaving is a totally different story. Mm-hmm. Just then, in terms of whether we'll have addressed corruption by 2026, I mean, I think saying, you know, yes, we've got initiatives on the go at the moment. We've had a new initiative launched by the minister last year, which is going to look specifically at corruption in the health sector, which is fantastic. In the presidential summit last year, we looked at the number of interventions that yeah. we could introduce. So it's on the right track. All of these things are still in their infancy, and we're still actually yet to see what we're going to achieve with those things. You know, mm-hmm. to make the assumption that, oh, by 2026 everything will be fine, I think that's maybe a bit of a stretch. And I think the system should be built so that we protect it against those kinds of interventions.
Dr. Bandile, just quickly touching on what Stembuso spoke of in terms of the amendment of the Healthcare Act. And she says that currently the Act identifies women as a mother.
Yeah, look, I mean, looking at what the bill is proposing and what the Health Markets Inquiry is also proposing, mm-hmm. one can flat out say there's going to be amendments to the Act going forward to
sure.
accommodate those changes that are being proposed there. But what I want to touch on as well, Adrian, is the issue around the trust deficit. I think we can't duck and dive the fact that there's a trust deficit in as far as government running big programs. And we must accept that and deal with that directly. But what this bill then presents is an opportunity for us as a country, not as Minister of Health, not as the private sector, but as a country as a whole, to then say, how do we protect this new baby from all the ills that we have encountered in other situations, in other SOEs, in other scenarios where government was managing funds that did not end up arriving where it was meant to arrive. That's a conversation that we need to have as a country, because when we are dealing with the issue of the NHI, it's not a private sector, public sector conversation. It's a conversation of providing healthcare for the whole nation. And so the responsibility of ensuring that this bill and all its intentions function properly lies squarely on our shoulders. You raised, for instance, when you did your opening, you referred to the hearings that are coming the 21st to the 24th of February, towards the end of the month. Those hearings and the previous processes of written submissions are precisely a platform to say to the nation as a whole, how do you see this thing working properly so that it delivers on what it needs to deliver? And what are the other things it hasn't touched on that it needs to touch on so that we're able to actually see the reality we desire? We can't sit back and want to shoot down the minister and want to shoot down the private sector. Everybody needs to come on board. And how they come on board is a conversation that we need to actively have. What is non-negotiable is the fact that South Africa needs to deliver universal health coverage.
Okay, let's get Prajames Mohale to give us a comment as well as a question. So we are opening up the floor. Please remember to be short and sharp, straight to the point, so that we can get through as many as possible. Prajames, good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good.
Thank you, and I'd like to greet the House. And I'll be very short, straight to the point. I'm very, very sorry to have our own public and private medical aid representatives to be here, being the government or on the medical aid side. I'll talk as one of the citizens that is facing a real problem with what needs to happen, whether do I have to believe into the new national medical aid, or do I really benefit anything as I speak now as an employee in the country? Here is a case that has happened, and it happens to a lot of people. An employee gets into any organization, he's employed, their company has got its own medical aid. You join the medical aid and you take the lowest package because of your home take. and one employee gets injured or you get into a certain circumstances and you are medically boarded. When you are medically boarded, we believe that an employee at that time needs the medical aid more than anything at that point. The company withdraws its own contributions completely and you remain on your own. It's either you die or you sacrifice your 75% that you get in order to go through. God save us. We need a lot that needs to be done from our own private sector and from our own government. 2026, we pray it's too late. We believe we are South Africans. We have the potential. We have the capacity. People, leaders, put yourself into the shoes of the citizens. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Is it Sam, right? Sam? Oh, okay, sorry, it's right at the back. Sam Mphahlane.
Mphahlane. Yeah, this is for... Oh, sorry, from the speaker. There is another economy running on top of the private healthcare funding system, and that economy is the fraud and corruption within the private sector itself. And in particular, I normally give the doctors a bit of a pardon. I'm saying we as members of the medical aid, we go to the doctor, we ask for all the wrong things, we get them, we destroy the practice of these members. And at the end of the day, they say 22 billion, whether it's 8 billion, doesn't matter. There is an economy running that you're going to inherit of people who are destroying private healthcare. Rajesh has said, these are the things we don't talk about. We catch the whole system, we only punish the doctor because the 20 or 30 or 40 or 100 members were part of the fraud. Nothing happens to them. And I wrote about these things, and this is a topic that people don't want to touch, but the members are destroying practices of doctors, and when the schemes get them, they say, put the doctor on indirect, or this doctor will not be paid. The same members will just go to the next doctor and destroy them. Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Yamkela quickly, and then we'll have some of your responses.
I just want to quickly ask... In the imagination of the NHI, you do say, Dr. Pillay, especially you, that in the initial stages you want to boost the public healthcare system, then incorporate the private healthcare system in the later phases. But why have we not imagined a system that is without private healthcare? If we really want to abolish inequality in terms of how we access healthcare, because either way, you still have a scenario where you have people who can directly afford private healthcare, getting better healthcare facilities, especially in urban areas like Gauteng and Western Cape, where there are actually more private hospitals per number than there are public hospitals. If you can think around Johannesburg, you will find four or five public hospitals in the CBD, and you find more than 25 private hospitals that you can access. So how are we actively saying that we can follow models that have been followed in other countries in the Scandinavian region, in Cuba, where you actually have the government administrating the entire public health care system, as opposed to having this dichotomy where the haves and the have-nots have different access and ways of managing health care? Because giving people who are of different heights the same kind of crate is not going to elevate them in the same way, because they are still different in height.
Okay, Dr. Pillay, actually, why don't we have the Canadian model as
yes.
well? Yeah, the one tier model.
So this is exactly what I was speaking about here earlier. I said we're moving away from a two tier system to a single tier system, and in that single tier, we have everybody in one pool contributing. You access your care based on your clinical need, not on how much of money you have in your pocket, because no disease knows boundaries. So whether you're rich or poor, you're going to get a particular disease, and you don't want to then ask the question, can I afford the treatment for this disease? So that's
then what's the use then of having private facilities? If we're saying that we're pushing for one-tier system, why then have private hospitals?
Remember, a private hospital is effectively owned privately,
yes.
but delivering systems publicly in an NHI system. In all of the countries that have implemented UHC in their different forms, there are privately owned facilities but publicly delivered services. Mm-hmm. So if you spoke to a doctor who was working in many of the European countries where UHC is implemented, and you ask him, are you a public doctor, a private doctor? He would look at you for many seconds before answering and say, I don't know, because I'm not employed by the state, but I earn all my money from a contract to the NHI fund in that country, right? Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're not employed, whether you want to call that private or not, I suppose is a matter for debate. But the point is that you have privately owned facilities now. The state is not going to buy those facilities, but those that are running those facilities will contract into the NHI fund, mm-hmm. and the fund will then deliver services by people accessing those facilities.
Is it then fair to say that government is outsourcing its responsibilities?
Well, I think the question is, should the state then build additional facilities in order to deliver services? And the question is, what happens to those private facilities? Who's going to occupy that? Because that'll be a wasted resource. Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't just cut our nose to spite our faces to say, well, we don't like private, so we're going to build our own. It would make more sense for us to work with the private sector and understand how they can deliver services within the NHI.
Okay. Dr. Morris?
Thanks so much. My question is mainly to Dr. Pillay. I wanted to know how far have we thought through the undesired side effects of the implementation of the NHI? Shirley, to some extent, alluded to the issue of an exodus of healthcare practitioners who are not aligned to the NHI. The other possibility is currently, as things stand, foreign nationals can access a lot of our healthcare services, least of which is pregnant women. They get free services in our primary healthcare facilities. To what extent is that going to change under the NHI, and to what extent have we planned to mitigate against that? Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you for that. Dr. Patel, a question here on Twitter from Mqebisi is, what is going to happen to the current premiums we are paying towards medical aid? Are they going to increase or decrease? And then just to take that particular conversation forward is, what happens to the savings?
The savings accumulated. I guess those, you can't touch it, because to some extent there were some tax credits associated with that or tax benefits to it. You can't just draw it, there will be implications. The premiums, hopefully it remains the same or it goes downwards. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. I think the current trajectory of premiums is simply unsustainable. And therefore it's critical that you need to introduce various interventions, various reforms, whether it's regulatory or otherwise. We've got to think differently to try to solve this problem. And there's many things that we can do right now. It's just a question of, do we have the will to do it?
Yeah.
And that's the big problem. As far as that savings concerned, I think that was probably the worst invention that we've had in the healthcare environment. And that's one of the things that's probably perpetuated the problems we have right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm a proponent of the at-risk benefit plan. This is why that single plan with the income cross-subsidies that you can get, that's the ideal way to go. Because those who can't afford can be cross-subsidized by those who can afford mm-hmm. for an essential service package. And I think that's the way we need to start off. And then above that, once we identify that essential package, yeah, depending on how deep your pocket is or what you can afford to have additional.
Okay.
I'm not a fan of savings account for one simple reason. It's the same as out-of-pocket expenditure, and that's how we've got to treat it.
You wanted to add something quickly?
Of the four instruments that are articulated as where the pooling of funds would come from, there is the payroll tax, which fundamentally, when you break it down, is the employer-employee contribution, which is really the medical aid. What really changes is is you currently cross-subsidizing within a limited pool of the 10 of you in whatever scheme, and that cross-subsidy in the context of the NHI will then extend to the rest of the country. But the real problem, maybe to what he was coming to, is that no one has actually noticed that medical aid as a concept has shifted to what it was when it initially started. Mm-hmm. Medical aid was a bet between you and the scheme that I'll give you 5 rand and I will get 6 for 5 rand's worth. Mm-hmm. And the medical scheme will say, I'll take your 5 rand and I bet you're going to get 6 for 3 rand's worth. Now they actually say, you only paid me 5 rand, you can only get 6 for 3 rand.
And that's the problem to the premiums that keep increasing, but the quality that you're getting out of that actual money that you're paying to the scheme is not matched to what you're getting out of it. Mm-hmm. So there's a benefit that is actually going to accrue to both the private individuals in this conversation that think they can afford healthcare, and also to those that can't afford healthcare. But the one question that I really wanted to touch on before you move, Agent, is the issue around do we not take over the entire private healthcare and make it public? That fundamentally negates the original question on do we have enough money? Because if you wanted to take over the entire private healthcare, you would literally wipe out 50% of your budget and ignore 50% of investments that have been made into health infrastructure, that have been made into health resources that currently are available, which in the context of the NHI, you're saying to the private players and to the private providers, hey, can we just bring some people to occupy some of the space that you're not using?
Dr. Pillay?
Yes, if I can just respond to this issue around immigration. I think it's important to appreciate that those who want to emigrate often emigrate to countries that already have NHI systems in place. So the question to ask is, what are you emigrating for? If you're emigrating because of NHI, then you're choosing the wrong countries, because all of the countries you're going to actually have NHI in place. They regulate price, they regulate where you must practice, how you practice. When you go there, they're going to ask you to write exams again. You're going to have to write exams again. If you pass, you must then do a year of community service, and you'll be posted to the most rural of areas in order to practice. You know, you don't choose that you want to practice in the city. So the question is, why would you want to do that if you're currently established here? It doesn't make any sense. So I know it may be a knee-jerk reaction from some people, but I think when they do the maths, they'll work out that actually it doesn't make any sense.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Let's just quickly hear from Dr. Gil Mahlatsi, who is the executive chairman of Sakiwa. Sawubona.
I would like to make 3 points. One point is on the infrastructure. We come from a company that builds infrastructure for healthcare, and we are offering government our services. We're building the first medical school since democracy in Limpopo that will train medical doctors. Those who want to live can live. And secondly, we just built a Cecilia Makiwane Hospital in Mtanzana. We are going to build private clinics and hospitals in the townships and in the rural areas. We're going to do that in a cost-effective manner. That is from a private sector perspective. Secondly, we are offering government what is called EPC plus finance in terms of the infrastructure, financing their own infrastructure over a 10, 15-year period for NHI. Thirdly, in terms of the funding side, we would like to see government shifting the risk from, he's just commented on how you decrease the benefit. They manage costs, not care. How government can shift the risk to the doctor? So the doctor doesn't give you money to go and buy groceries because he knows that's his money that he's giving you to buy groceries. We have the solutions to these systems. If you look at the Italian system integrates both private and public. It's got systems such that you can do wellness instead of managing wellness. In our case, we've got this burden of diseases of hypertension and so on, diabetes. You got to manage that guy so that he doesn't go to hospital. And that's the way you should do it. And we are prepared to participate in NHI with our government in order to come up with these things. We have, of course, in this case, in our country, the Road Accident Fund, that is actually helping all the injured people. But the private sector short-term insurers don't pay for that. Yet, you do pay for that. They don't pay for it. So there are things that we can do in terms of shifting all the costs to the public sector is subsidizing the private sector in the case of the RAF. So we must look at those things and not just come up with complaints and things like that. We would like to contribute to the NHI. We support it. 15 million lives are employed but uninsured. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for that. And with that, we are going to take our closing remarks. Dr. Pillay, there's a question that you didn't answer, and that was with regards to foreign nationals. Yeah.
So I think on foreign nationals, if you read the bill, you will see that foreign nationals will be able to access services in the public sector or under the NHI in the private sector as well, but they would have to pay for these services. There are some services that the foreign nationals will have free, for example, emergency medical care, care for children, etc. But foreign nationals, like when if I went to another country and got ill, I'd be expected to pay for those services. So there will be a need for you to either take out some insurance or to pay out of pocket for that if you're a foreign national and you've fallen ill in another country. And so that's what we'll implement. So they will have access to services, but they simply have to pay for it.
Okay. Dr. Patel, let's start off with you. Closing remarks in 30 seconds.
I think definitely everyone buys into the universal healthcare coverage. How we structure the NHI as one component of the reform is one of the discussions we're going to have to take forward. It was mentioned there are some problems with the bill. Mm-hmm. Let's engage, let's discuss, let's identify those problems, change that bill to the extent that we can, and let's go ahead. NHI is an essential reform that's needed in the country.
Dr. Bandile?
Look, one of the debates that always rises when we're having this chat is where is the money going to come from? The irony about that question is that it literally justifies why we need to do this. Because universal health coverage and the NHI in our context is actually a concept that is meant to be implemented in the context of limited resources. So each time you ask, where's the money going to come from this? You are saying, let's do this.
Shelley?
Okay, thank you. So in terms of what I've heard from today, there's a number of things that I think have touched on a very important issue, and that's human resources in the healthcare sector and the attention that needs to be put on how we manage those and how we manage the distribution of human resources and the attention paid to remuneration, contracting, you know, where these people are going to work and where they're going to come from as well, because, you know, it's the majority of healthcare delivery at the moment is dependent on your human resources. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, I think if we can give more attention to that, not necessarily in the bill, but in the policies, I think it'll go a long way to sort of allaying some of the fears.
Okay, Dr. Pillay, in closing, responding to the comment that was made earlier on by Bob James, would we see substantial improvements in the public health sector ahead of 2026?
That's the plan, as I indicated earlier. The intention is that the public health system must be ready to deliver NHI, and the Office of Health Standards Compliance will have to confirm that the quality standards have been achieved. That's the only point at which we will then be bringing on private sector players as well to participate within this, because the public sector will be the backbone of the NHI service delivery.
And I'd like to thank everyone who came through and who honored our invitation as well. We really appreciate your time and all the contributions that you've made. Apologies to some of those who we couldn't take your calls as well as your tweet, but just be aware that between the 21st as well as the 24th of February, there will be the public consultations that will be taking place here in Gauteng. City of Tshwane on the 21st of February, Saturday the 22nd will be West Rand District at the municipality in Kagiso, and then Sunday the 23rd, it will be the city of Johannesburg. Those consultations will be taking place in Soweto, and then Monday the 24th of February, it will be at the city of Ekurhuleni in Germiston. So you can go to, I think the department's website should have more details in terms of the public consultation. The parliamentary website, sure. The parliamentary website will have more details. Thank you guys so much, and goodbye. Happy NHI.
This National Health Insurance Dialogue was proudly brought to you by RH Bupilo and Sakiwo on Power 98.7. Now we are talking.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.